Well, can I add my word of welcome to Simon's? It's great to be here, and I'm very much looking forward to joining you more full-time in the summer. If you could please keep that passage open in front of you, we're going to focus in on verses 33 onwards. That'd be a big help too. Death. It's awful, it's terrible. 150 dead people in the German Wings tragedy. 150 individual tragedies. It's hard to kind of get our minds around what that sight must be like there on the Alps as they rummage through the wreckage to try and identify people's bodies. It seems so unreal, doesn't it, to us? Just so far removed. But then maybe death becomes personal. Maybe you've experienced it. People die and we miss them and it hurts. And that's true for me as well. My mother and my uncle lost early to cancer. But death, it's just one of those taboos, isn't it? One of the few taboos that's left. One of the things you're not supposed to talk about. You can talk about sex, you can talk about politics, but talk about death amongst your friends and suddenly it puts a real downer on the conversation, doesn't it? If you ever do that. In fact, I'm surprised if you ever do that. But one thing we certainly don't do is celebrate it. We certainly don't celebrate death. But at Easter time, we do. We do celebrate death. One particular death. The death of Jesus. It's a bit weird when you think about it, isn't it? I remember when I was a lawyer a few years back, and the firm was acting for a guy who was on death row in Jamaica. And it was the final hearing of appeal before the Privy Council here. This was nothing to celebrate. We were trying to save the guy's life. And so this, if you like, leaves a bit of a bitter taste in the mouth, unlike those Easter eggs on your tables. Even stranger still, we celebrate not just any death, but a horrific death, a ghastly death, a public, painful death. A crucifixion. Seems almost medieval, doesn't it? So horrific that Cicero said this: "These are horrors which ought to be far removed, not only from the person of a Roman citizen, but even from his thoughts and his gaze and his hearing." You're not supposed to even think about it. You're not supposed to hear about it. It's just so horrific. No other world religion celebrates the death of its founder quite like this. It just seems plain weird, morbid. Why then? Why celebrate a death, Jesus' death, at Easter? Well, I'm sure many of us know the answer to that. But we need to hear it again so that we don't miss out on the real Easter. Here's why. And if you forget everything else that you hear over the next few minutes, remember this one thing. Jesus was rejected so that we can be accepted. Jesus was rejected so that we can be accepted. Let's take that in two parts then. Firstly, Jesus was rejected. Take a look down at verse 33 on that passage on the inside of your notice sheet. And let me read it for us. "At noon, darkness came over the whole land until 3 in the afternoon. And at 3 in the afternoon, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, 'Eloi, Eloi, lema sabachthani,' which means, 'My God, why have you forsaken me?'" According to the British Psychological Society, 4 in 10 of us are scared of walking around our homes in the dark. Maybe that's you. Maybe you're one of those people. I remember when I was growing up, this little pathway, this dark pathway on the way home, which I used to run through because it was pitch black. It was scary. But this darkness in this passage is much more fearful. It is the darkest day in history. Imagine the scene. Jesus is there and he's hanging on the cross for 3 hours at lunchtime when the sun is supposed to be at its brightest. About now. You can't see the hand in front of your face. You can't see the food that you're eating. I remember the eclipse in 1999. It wasn't like that rubbish one a couple of weeks ago, which felt just like a normal day in British summertime when the sky stayed grey. But this was a proper eclipse, I remember it. And I was in my office, and I remember suddenly it went completely dark. And suddenly all the street lights came on again. It was as if it was night again in the middle of the day. It was a strange feeling. No one was doing any work, of course, as they were staring out the window. But it was a strange thing. Well, here it's as if God flips a switch and switches off the sun for 3 hours. It is the day that the world went dark. Here's an experiment for you. When you go home this evening, when it's turned dark, why don't you switch on the light and then switch it off again? And just think, 3 hours. And not just my house light gone off, all light gone. There are all kinds of theories, of course, as to why it happened, whether it was some kind of dust cloud or something like that. Well, it matters less how it happened. It matters more why it happened. Why is it then that the world went dark? Well, you see, in the Bible, darkness is a sign. It's a sign of God's anger, his judgment, his punishment. And it falls on Jesus. God is angry with Jesus. Jesus, you see, is rejected. One of the Old Testament prophets, Amos, puts it like this. In that day, declares the sovereign Lord, I will make the sun go down at noon and darken the earth in broad daylight. Darkness. God's anger. Jesus rejected. But this is very important for us to realize, though, that this is not like our anger. It's not like human anger. Our anger is completely out of control. But God's anger isn't like that. It's not as if God has some kind of Elton John hissy fit or a temper tantrum. It's not like that. God's anger is his controlled, settled opposition to all that is wrong and evil and bad in our world. That's the kind of anger that we're talking about. And yet it falls on Jesus. And so this is how it felt. This is how that felt for Jesus. At the end of the 3 hours, he cries out, "My God, my God! Why have you forsaken me?" Jesus, rejected by God, alone, left hanging there on the cross. Not just rejected by the crowds, but by his own Father. And so Jesus deliberately picks up on words used hundreds of years before to explain that, to explain the darkness, as he cries out in utter anguish. Listen to this. He's being rejected by his own Father. God punished his own Son. He's not faking it, he cries out. He's in real distress, real physical and emotional pain, but most of all, spiritual pain, spiritual distress. Because in those few moments, those few hours, he suffers hell on the cross. He's rejected instead of people like us. He's rejected so that we don't have to be. Last Christmas, my brother dug out this box, which was hidden away in this cupboard. It was all dusty, and in it were all these films of when we were growing up, when we were kids. My dad in those days had more hair. Sorry, Dad, if you're listening to this later on. My brother and I had chubby cheeks and red wellies. And then, of course, there were all the fun times and the embarrassing bits, the bits where you wondered why Dad carried on filming as my brother grabs this dried rabbit turd off the lawn and sticks it in his mouth. Pretty grim. But just imagine now that these films are there and they're always on. And this film is the story of my life. Imagine this is it. This film here, look, this is the story of my life. And well, I wonder what would be on there. Well, there'd be good stuff, wouldn't there? Stuff I'd be quite pleased with. Achievements. Time spent with people. Happy memories. But then there'd be the bad stuff as well. The way I've treated others. The things I'm ashamed of. The way I've treated God. Everything on there. No edits. stuff that no one knows about, apart from me. And all of that separates me from God. But imagine, here is another DVD, another film. This is the story of Jesus' life. It's the film of Jesus' life, and as you look at it, you see all the good stuff and none of the bad stuff. Jesus always treated people right. He always loved God. And you can see it for yourself. All you need to do is pick up an account of Jesus' life, pick up a Bible, and read it in the pages of history. Jesus never separated from his Father, nothing to come between them. And at the cross, there is this amazing swap. We swap places. Here's how it works. Jesus' life, his record, becomes mine. There's a swap. So now Jesus' life, his record, becomes mine. And mine becomes Jesus. There is a swap. That is what happens at the cross. I'm guilty. Jesus is innocent, but God is angry with him instead of me. It's a massive swap. That is what happens at the cross, as he is punished instead of me. And Jesus did all of that willingly. God the Father, you see, he could have stopped it. Jesus, the Son, he could have stopped it. But he didn't. Maybe that's what the crowd thinks is going to happen in verse 35. People think Jesus is asking for Elijah to rescue him. Here come the cavalry, maybe. Well, Elijah, the most famous prophet in the Old Testament, maybe he will come and save Jesus. In the movies, of course, that's what happens. The rescuer always comes, the hero comes, unless, of course, it's some kind of French, depressing existentialist movie, then it ends badly. But in all the movies, Bond, Spider-Man, whoever it is, even Frozen, even all the Disney films, someone comes to the rescue. But here, they wait. They watch. What happens? Nothing. Nothing happens. God doesn't send anyone. No one comes to rescue Jesus. Superman fights back. Jesus doesn't. Superman lives, Jesus dies. It shouldn't be, should it? But that is the story. That is the message of Easter. So then in verse 37, Jesus cries out for a second time. It's loud. What's he going to say this time? A final struggle, maybe? Maybe this isn't the end. Well, no. No, it is. He breathes his last. He expires. A last gasp. And then he's gone. He's gone. And that is how much God loves people like us. When someone says, I love you, and gives you flowers, that is worth something. When someone says, I love you, and gives you a ticket to the World Cup final, maybe for some of the blokes, that is worth a bit more. But when someone says, I love you, and you're unlovable, well, that's worth even more. But when God says, I love you, and you're unlovable, and he gives you the very thing that he loves most, his son Jesus, well, that's worth everything, isn't it? And so Jesus, he was rejected, and that is the message of Easter. But that's not all, because he was rejected for a reason. Jesus was rejected, so secondly, we can be accepted. In verse 38, the camera pans across town, away from the cross, to the other side, to the temple. Now, the temple was the most important place in town, more important back then than St. Paul's, or this building, or Trafalgar Square, or Wembley Stadium, even. It is the place where God meets with his people. And once a year, once a year, the priest, a special religious person, can go into this place called the Holy of Holies to meet with God behind this big fat curtain as fat as your hand. But now something strange happens, because this curtain is torn in two, from top to bottom, from heaven to earth. And it's God that is doing it. This isn't a bit of an accident. This isn't some kind of temple furnishings malfunction. That's not what's going on. And as you start to think about that, it sounds a little bit like divine vandalism, like ISIS smashing up that museum, that God is doing this to this temple. But that's not what's going on here. Well, what is going on here then? Well, you see, God is ripping up the old religious system. He's ripping up the temple curtain. And 30 years or so later, he'll do the same thing as he tears apart the whole temple. God, you see, is judging. He judges the temple. Jesus replaces it. And that's what he promised would happen back in chapter 13 of Mark's Gospel. And so the Jewish authorities who look the part, who do all the right religious stuff, but in reality they don't care for God or Jesus, his son. Well, Jesus calls time on all of that. He rips up their religion, their religious system. And wonderfully, that means that other people can get into heaven. Other people can be accepted. People like us. And who's the first man, the first person to walk into heaven? Well, it's a professional. But not a lawyer or a banker or a broker. It's a professional killer. One of the men who killed Jesus, one of his executioners, the soldier there in verse 39. He gives Jesus the title that normally is only reserved for Caesar and the Roman gods. Son of God. King. And he says that all because of what he saw. He saw Jesus die. You see, Jesus' death, it reveals all. He gets it. He gets who Jesus is because of his death. He sees that he is king of the world. What did he see? The darkness. The 3 hours of darkness. Jesus dignified death. The words that he said. Maybe he heard that as well. He saw. He heard. And then he realized the penny dropped. Surely Jesus was the Son of God. He is the King. And he accepted Jesus. And in turn, Jesus accepted him. And so now things look very different indeed. He'll never forget that day. He can't forget that day. He's changed everything. And if God can accept this man, well, he can accept us as well. Jesus was rejected so that we can be accepted. You can imagine the story moving on now. And the darkness has gone. Those 3 hours have ended. The sun returns. And it's a new dawn. It is as if it is a new day. A new day in history. There's resurrection to come. Maybe he didn't grasp everything, this soldier. But actually, I guess if you speak to people here, and it's certainly true for me, I didn't understand everything when I started to follow Jesus. But he did know enough. Do you know enough? If you do, what is holding you back? If not, why not find out more? Maybe it'd be a good thing to think about these things some more. There are a couple of ways you can do that. One way is to pick up this little pamphlet on the way out, called The Real Jesus. Another way is to fill in the back of your notice sheet and sign up for that Christianity Explored course that Simon mentioned, or come back to the talks here. But maybe this is something that you've known for years. It's not new news to you. Well, if that's the case, let me encourage you, don't let The Real Easter passing you by. Wonder, marvel, glory afresh at the cross. Deep in your heart, glory, marvel, wonder at the darkest day in history. And in one sense, this darkest day is for those who trusted in Jesus their brightest day, a day of great joy and hope. Why not take some time out, maybe this Easter weekend, to reflect on this, to think about it, and to worship Jesus for it. And pray that this message would be visibly something that others notice that you live for, at work, at home, amongst your friends, amongst your family. It's a glorious message. Happy Easter.